Hello, and welcome to the Points League. I'm your host and commissioner, Sean Murphy. And on this podcast, we're going to do something a little different. I do not have a guest, mostly because there's just not enough time to get someone on to the show before everyone makes their way to Indianapolis. I'm also doing this on Tuesday night, kind of as keeper selections come in, and I think there's already been 7 or 8 people who have provided their keepers. A couple surprises in there. We'll get to that in a bit. I just thought I would do this podcast as kind of an addendum to the off-season retrospective and just kind of provide you guys something to listen to, get mad at, as you're on your flights or in your cars listening to the pod. We'll see how this goes. If it goes well, we'll continue to do it in the future. And if not, we'll just pretend this never happened. So some of this pod will be kind of an announcement or just kind of an expectations for the weekend sort of thing. Another part of this will be me kind of going through and rereading some of the off-season retrospective. And then other parts of it will be me either elaborating on the retrospective or just going on a completely different tangent. Everyone's coming into Indy, mostly on Friday. A couple people are getting in on Thursday. If you're in the Indianapolis area, or if you're getting in on Thursday like Rob is, I will definitely be at Chatham Tap on Mass Ave watching the U.S. soccer match. Don't worry, they have plenty of televisions to show all the different NCAA tournament games. U.S. game starts at 7. Pretty eager to watch. Should be a pretty interesting match, competitive match. Definitely going to be the A-team playing from what I can see, just based on the call-ups. So if you're into soccer or just want to get a drink, I am sure you will see me, probably Tim, hopefully Rob, and maybe a few others. In terms of Friday, we can get into our Airbnb at 3. I'm going to reach out and see if we can get something a little earlier. If we run into the situation where folks want to go to the Marquette game, we can always just park our cars near the Airbnb, leave it there, and then go back later. I know the Marquette game starts at 2:00. And Rob was asking, like, how close is it walking distance to the stadium? It's about a 30-minute walk from our Airbnb to Conseco or Gainbridge, I don't know what they're calling it now. And fortunately, that 30-minute walk can pretty easily turn into a pub crawl. I'll be up ready to go whenever others are ready to go. I haven't purchased a ticket yet. My guess is if I go into the game, it will be at the very, very last minute because I know how those NCAA tournament tickets work in Indianapolis, and usually the tickets just absolutely tank as you approach tip-off. So should be an exciting win for the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers over Marquette. I'm looking forward to seeing the first major upset of the Friday games. That's kind of the plan there. From after the game, presumably we'll head back up Mass Ave towards the Airbnb. If we haven't gotten in, we'll get into the Airbnb and kind of get some of the room situations settled. And then probably go back out on Friday as people come in. I mean, the really fortunate part is, and I'll forward the key code to everyone, as you come in, like, for the most part, where we'll be hanging out at is to be a very short walk. The Airbnb is right by the Bottle Works neighborhood, as well as Mass Ave. It's right next to Tim. And I lived in 2 different places that were basically a block away. So I know the area pretty well. There's lots of restaurants. It's easy to get around. Indy's a pretty easy town to navigate through, as I'm sure most of you have been there at some point in your life. So that's kind of the game plan on Friday. On Saturday, my plan is basically to get up, go work out or go for a run, go take a shower, go get something to eat, come back and figure something out. Probably once I go out to get something, I'll probably stay out for a while and then come back like maybe an hour and a half before the auction starts, just to get set up. If you are coming from either your home nearby in Indianapolis or Bloomington or wherever you're living at, I would advise to bring like a foldable chair. I don't know that we'll have enough. We'll have a ton of seating like in the Airbnb. We should have really good Wi-Fi, which is probably the most important thing. But I would bring a chair of some kind just to make sure that you got that covered. We should have plenty of space in the living room area too. We should also have some snacks available. I know Tom asked me last week if he could go grab beer and some like snacks and stuff like that during the auction. So shout out to Tom for taking care of that. Hopefully he was able to pick everything up. That should be really helpful during the auction. I mean, I don't really expect the auction to go too terribly long. I think it usually goes about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes, mostly because the keepers represent such a high percentage of the players that need to be taken. So it usually goes pretty quick. And then after the auction, we've got Hyde Park Steakhouse, which is more downtown. It's a really nice steakhouse for the dinner bet. I have a reservation for 10 of us, which should pretty much cover everyone. I believe Andrew and I did a dinner bet maybe like eight or 9 years ago at Hyde Park Steakhouse. It's pretty nice. Make sure you have something suitable to wear into the steakhouse. So I'll be wearing probably like a sports jacket or sports coat with jeans. But you know, you definitely don't want to roll in like sweatpants if you're gonna go to that dinner. So we'll be doing that afterwards. That was a good time last year. For those who made it out to Arizona, it'll be very similar this year. After the dinner, we'll probably venture back up through Mass Ave, and you know everyone's free to do whatever the fuck they want, but that's what my plan is, to kind of bar hop home, given that it will be probably pretty late once we finish dinner. The dinner is scheduled for like 8 o'clock, so like if you figure we're eating and drinking there for like two and a half hours, it should be about 10:30, 11 o'clock by the time we get done. So maybe like a two and a half hour bar crawl back home, fall asleep, we wake up the next morning, it's Sunday, and everyone goes home. So that's kind of very tentatively my plan for the weekend. Definitely looking forward to seeing everyone. We'll be missing Adam and Vandy. Their presence will obviously be missed quite a bit, especially during the alcohol consumption portions of the weekend. We'll see them at the auction. I think there's a webcam feature on the Yahoo app, so they can log into that. We'll be able to see their beautiful faces as they auction off. So that'll be good. What else? One other thing, just to kind of think about as you're coming in. We need to decide where we want to go next year for this. So traditionally, we've tried to alternate between kind of a Midwest location and kind of more of a destination location. Obviously, we've been to Arizona a couple times, went to Vegas a couple years ago, or like the first one of these that we did, I think that was like in 2015 or something like that, a long time ago now. But anyway, we need to figure out where we're going to go next year. And if that means we're going back to Arizona, that's cool with me. If someone wants to suggest going to one of the Florida sites, that's cool too, although those are really, really spread out. I wouldn't be opposed going back to Vegas. I wouldn't be opposed going to Austin, but preferably somewhere warm. That would be my preference. So let's see. So that's kind of like the housekeeping items. So I've got the retrospective mostly written at this point. Obviously, there's not too many more trades, as most of the people have already identified their keepers and sent those out. I did want to talk about some of the trades that went through this offseason. So I guess I'll just go ahead and start off with The big one that VJ and I made on New Year's Day. It was really, really fun because on New Year's Day, but it was really like basically New Year's Eve. This was a lot of fun because I was in Indianapolis actually with Tim, and we spent pretty much the entire evening just bar hopping around Indy, drinking. About halfway through the evening that I was going to make a pretty big deal with someone in the league, and that turned into kind of a fun little game in which I gave him a few hints about who the owner was and who the players involved were. And by the end of it, I got to inform him that I was trading Zach Wheeler and Framber Valdez for $165, which he was not too happy about. So it was really a delightful way to ring in the new year. Now, kind of jokes aside, and the way that I wrote this up was combining all the other smaller deals that DJ and I did throughout the offseason, which basically just felt like an extension of this deal. I felt like pretty much solidified his team as a playoff team by acquiring Framber and Wheeler. I think it was just a really easy deal for him to make, and now he has one of the best pitching groups in the league, if not the best. So my favorite thing to write this offseason was the article I put at the very bottom of the retrospective, My Problem with Krabby's Keepers. So I'm just going to basically read this and just kind of riff whatever on this, but it starts out, Rob Crabb came into this offseason with the most amount of money ever, $603. Yes, some of that money was returned to Matthew, but it's still an absurd amount of money to spend prior to and at auction. Rob's keepers are fine for a team looking to be in the mix for a playoff berth, but when you have this much money going into the offseason, shouldn't you be aiming for something a little better than just another fourth place? Rob Guerrero, Robert, and Rodriguez, they're all good players at fine values. And sure, Vladimir Guerrero isn't the perennial MVP candidate everyone hoped he would be, but you can still pencil him into the All-Star game for the next 5 to 6 seasons. Luis Robert had a great season last year, but his RBI and run totals are going to prohibit him from getting to that next level we saw in the White Sox. Grayson Rodriguez may or may not be a top 15 guy, but you know, it's fine if he's just a top 30 starter this season. Every dollar is precious under the $90 cap, and these guys represent strong surplus values. No doubt about that. In terms of the trades that Rob made this offseason, I like the acquisition of Luis Castillo quite a bit. He's a top 10 starter in a great situation in Seattle. And Rob, if you want to have a luxury utility spot in Shohei Ohtani, that's cool too. Doesn't really get much better than that from a util standpoint. But my issue with your keeper selection is the presence of Walker Buehler on this team. So Walker Buehler is being kept for $14 this season, and we really have no idea when he's going to start pitching. We think it's going to be maybe towards the second or third week of May, but that's not the only the only issue with Walker Buehler. He's coming off of his second Tommy John surgery. He notably struggled after Major League Baseball started enforcing the zero tolerance policy for tachy grip. Remember that? Remember, everyone? Tachy grip. It was a big deal a couple years ago. And when we last saw Buehler, he was sitting 95 and had an unspectacular strikeout rate and an ERA north of 4. And to me, it just doesn't make sense to keep a player like this when you have title aspirations. Or, you know, at least if you want to get him, why not just toss him back and rebuy him? You certainly have enough money to do it. So I don't really understand why Rob kept Walker Buehler. You know, the start of his season is going to be delayed, and the Dodgers already said they're going to go with a 6-man rotation. So it's just like, how many starts is he actually going to get? Like, it just seems like a massive headache to have a player like this going into the season when, you know, I would think that you have title aspirations. And, you know, the funny thing is, like, you could have went and got with that money and got, rather than Ohtani, like a player like Logan Webb or Pablo Lopez or, you know, another pitcher to kind of beef this rotation up. So I don't know, like just a lot of options, or better yet, why not just pay $175 to Habbie for Strider? And quite honestly, this goes not just for Rob, but I don't really understand why no one considered doing that throughout the entire offseason. Why not go and get the best player in our game if you're aiming to win a title? Like, he is, even before the Gerrit Cole injury, like, Spencer Strider was, like, $50 more on his own than what I had for Gerrit Cole or Corbin Burnes. So, like, and you get to keep him for, like, $14 the next season. So, I don't really understand why, how there wasn't more chatter about Strider being acquired this offseason. But, you know, as I point out here in the little illustration, that's the difference between a sea lion and merely being a crab at Portsley Beach. The next subject I want to talk about is Jack's offseason, which was fantastic for really a second year in a row. Hopefully it'll pay better dividends for Jack this year than it did last year. Jack, like, just really had a different energy or different vibe about him. I felt like the entire offseason just seemed like in years past, like, Jack has at different times kind of deferred to others taking the lead. And then I feel like this year, like, he was much more assertive in, like, setting terms and, like, going and getting what he wants. And probably the best example of this was him getting Zach Gallen for Matt in exchange for Marcus Stroman, Jordan Walker, and $120. And as I kind of lay out in the write-up, like, this is, like, such a massive amount of money to pay for Zach Gallen, who it has been a really good pitcher, like a top 12 pitcher. But, like, from my standpoint, this is probably about a $40 overpay. But at the same time, like, I get it. Like, and if you've ever dealt with Matt trying to make a deal with him, I know it can be super challenging. And I know Matt really didn't want to get rid of Gallen, which is part of the reason this trade was so expensive. But it's a really good example of someone just, like, going out, getting their guy, and just saying, fuck it. Because, like, at the end of the day, like, the money, it's not real money that you're spending. Like, it's made up imaginary money. And for the most part, it's really easy to liquidate players and get money back. So, like, going out and getting your guy, I think it makes sense, even if it is a slight overpay. I was talking with another owner the day after, and it was really funny. The owner was basically said, that's a big dick energy from Jack with that Gallen trade. Kudos to Jack. He was so hitter heavy going into this offseason that this first pitcher trade that he made, I definitely raised my eyebrows, and it was kind of the blockbuster night, if you will. In which it seemed like there were just trades coming in left and right all at the same time, which was super fun. But also at the same time, it was like, holy fuck, like, what are we talking about here? I thought Jack did a reasonable job on this first trade. And fortunately for Jack, it really just kind of kept getting better as the offseason went along. He followed up, like, a week or so later, acquiring Freddie Peralta from Kaiser in exchange for $57, Nico Horner and Evan Carter. So he's able to probably lessen the cash price to acquire Freddie Peralta. Actually, Freddie Peralta is a better player this year than Zach Gallen. So I was a really big fan of this trade. And, you know, if you combine the two together, you know, getting Zach Gallen and Freddie Peralta for $177 isn't too bad. It's not all that different than what VJ originally paid me for Wheeler and Framber Valdez. So I thought this trade was also very, very good. And then, you know, it got even better at the end of the offseason as folks kind of got tighter with their budgets. He got Max Fried from Happy in exchange for $30. And I have Max Fried as a basically a $60 player. And so I was really surprised that Max Fried was dealt for this amount. I know Andrew was kind of going back and forth between keeping Gausman or keeping, you know, presumably Fried, and made the choice to go with Gausman, who is definitely the higher projected player. But I've been a big fan of Max Fried for a long time, as has been documented in the chat and the offseason retrospective. So I thought this was a great deal for Jack as well. I mean, think about that. He got three top 20 pitchers for $207. So basically, what is that? Just short of $70. Yeah, just short of $70 a piece on average. So, you know, I think that really complements, you know, the hitters that he's got on this team as well. Obviously, he's got Corbin Carroll, who's, you know, one of the top offensive players coming in, you know, coming off of his rookie season. He's got Jackson Holliday, the new number one prospect in baseball. And then, you know, he's keeping CJ Abrams for cheap. And presumably Randy Arozarena as well. Jack actually isn't declared as keepers at this point, but, you know, I just think this is a really, really good offseason and really set a good example to Rob as to how a team should be run during the offseason when you have a bunch of cash. So hats off to Jack. He's still got $228 to spend at auction. He'll have $228 minus whatever he keeps, but that should still be like $120 or so. So, you know, he'll make waves at the auction as well and should be really well positioned to make a deep run into the playoffs, and, you know, has the makings of a championship team. So really, really well done this offseason by Jack. On a more depressing note, this offseason was my partner in crime in Indy on New Year's Eve, Tim Byrne. I feel like this offseason started out pretty promising for Tim, who, you know, didn't come into the offseason with a lot of money. He did make a very smart decision in trading away Kevin Gausman right before the deadline and getting back in return Logan Gilbert from Andrew. Gausman went on to help Andrew keep myself for the championship, but liquidating Gausman into a top 35, top 30 pitcher in Logan Gilbert, I thought was a really good move by Tim. It was probably going to come up short once again to make the playoffs. But you know, also, you know, in this offseason or early on in this offseason, made a couple, you know, pretty reasonable trades. One being with Trent, you know, just came into the league. He got Will Smith, who keeps for $6 this year, and then of course next year he'll keep for $15 because we've messed his keeper value up the past year or so. So pretty good value to start the offseason off with Will Smith, catcher, who, you know, I've been a big fan of for a while. And then he made definitely a bigger trade with Kaiser, acquiring Austin Riley and sending Tanner Bibee and Royce Lewis to Tom, which I thought was a really good trade for both parties. You know, on Tim's side, like, I thought, you know, this kind of takes two kind of volatile assets and gives you a really stable high-end piece in Austin Riley. And, you know, really, unfortunately for Tim, this really represented the high point of the offseason for him because, you know, shortly after Kodai Senga and just this past week, Yuri Perez have had arm and shoulder injuries. We're not really sure the status of Perez right now, but Tim already selected his keepers and he omitted both Senga and Perez. I thought, you know, he probably could have kept Senga for that price, and given that Senga's only going to miss, you know, 2 or 3 months, you know, it's not, you know, that devastating of a long-term injury. Like, I mean, people are going to get hurt right after the beginning of the season. On the flip side, I can also understand wanting to throw him back and seeing if he can get staying at the same value or a better value. And I guess the same thing for Perez, but I really kind of wish he would have X'd me and seen if he could keep Perez and then just throw him off if we get bad news over the next few days prior to auction. I just think it's a really frustrating offseason for Tim. I think only kept like $47, so he'll have like $115 or something like that to kind of play around with. And Tim's done a pretty good job shorthanded over the years, and he's been competitive. He certainly has the left side of his infield set up for the long run with Riley and Bobby Witt, so he's still got some pieces. I would just be curious to know if he would still make that Austin Riley trade again, knowing that he was going to miss out on Senga and Perez. A real tough one for Tim. And we know he'll make his presence known at auction. The next person I'm going to talk about is Trent. Trent coming into the league cold. It's so funny, like, thinking about our league, it's so unique, and it's so, I feel like, so difficult to kind of learn all the different trade dynamics and how things change so quickly just with inflation and the point system. And, it gets easier in time, but I can only imagine how overwhelmed at different times Trent felt, seeing some of these trades that probably don't look right intuitively. But I have no doubt that he'll get the hang of it. He did make a couple of trades this offseason, one being with Tim, in which he got MJ Melendez, which I was a fan of that trade for Trent. I think Melendez has really a chance to be a valuable catcher this year, although I do have some hesitation as to whether or not he'll stay at the position long term. He also got Vinny Pascantino, who I also really, really like. I think he's going to be really solid, kind of near all-star type of player. I don't think he'll be elite at all, but I think he'll be pretty solid. And then he also made a trade for Francisco Lindor and Jackson Merrill for me for $25. Jackson Merrill looks like he's going to be the starting center fielder for the Padres. He's looked really good. The reason I liked him was he kind of got comped to Michael Brantley. Which suggests to me that he's going to be kind of a high OBP, high average player with 2020 capabilities at his peak. So just a really good player to have in the fold, especially if you're cheap if you can get him. And then he also got Francisco Lindor who keeps at $21. Lindor's coming off of a 33 season. He's been easily one of the most consistent players in baseball over the past past decade now. I don't really see any reason why he wouldn't continue to do that. Those are some good trades there. Not really sure that Brandon Belak and Tyler Wells should be kept at this point, but I do think Belak's actually going to end up with the fifth rotation spot in Houston. And Tyler Wells might figure into, I think it's with the Orioles still, but probably not two guys that many people had picked out being kept. But that's okay. If I had to give Trent any advice at the auction, because he does have quite a bit of money going into the auction on Saturday, it would just be to be really aggressive. Go get your guys. I would definitely look at the past two auctions that we've had just to get an idea as to what guys go for, and to not really hesitate in going and getting elite talent. You do not want to end up with dollars left over in this auction. That is a definite disaster if you end up with money left over. You really want to spend it. I wouldn't say as quickly as possible, but I would say for Trent, you don't want to go through the top 20 players and not have one of them. Like, you definitely want to have you know, at least two $40 players, one, or maybe you go get a big one and challenge Rob for Corbin Burns, spend $140 and see how the rest of the auction goes. But yeah, my biggest piece of advice for this weekend would just be to make sure you spend your money and to be kind of ruthless in doing it, because you're not going to get any sympathy from this league. But also, you know, really looking forward to seeing Trent. I know he's going to try to make his way up to Indianapolis on Friday. So I'm going to do my best to meet up with him either outside of the Marquette game or on Mass Ave. And then I think we might see him out after the auction. He has little five responsibilities, which is going to prohibit him from drafting with us, but he'll be able to draft from, I presume, like a press box or some sort of office during the auction. But I really enjoyed doing the pod with Trent back in January, I think. And yeah, seems like a guy who will fit in really, really well at the league. Obviously, he's had some good gifts pointing fun at people. And yeah, just excited to continue to get to know him. So hopefully everyone will make a point of getting to know Trent when he's up in Indy. But so far, so good. Next person I'm going to talk about is Scott Vanderpool. And boy, this could be a more different offseason for Scott. You know, comparing this one to last one. He still has some pretty solid keeper values. He's still got Bellinger, Tatis, Glass now, Alonzo. Decided to keep Spencer Steer, who has a lot of positional flexibility. And then he still has Dylan Cease, who just got traded to the Padres. So that's a good development for him, because the White Sox are definitely going to suck ass this year. But yeah, really quiet on the trade fronts. We had a false trade that we made at some point in the middle of the offseason, but that one got nullified. We'll go into all the details on that. But anyway, I'm pretty curious to see how Vandy navigates this auction. He's going to go in with the fewest amount of auction dollars and really will be just bargain hunting. And I think it's going to be a good auction to do that. I do think there's going to be a lot of really high quality players left, or that do not go for a lot of money, just based on kind of the dynamics at the top. I think we're going to see a really aggressive Adam Witt and Rob Grab at the top. And then I think everyone else will, you know, be eager to get the few elite players that got thrown back. But like I said, I think there's going to be some really good future keeper values. And I feel like Vandy has done a decent job in the spot before. I think I mentioned that just like Tim, but I feel like Vandy has, you know, navigated his way to a pretty solid team in years past. I want to say the year that he got Pete Alonso was kind of like the situation as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if he got a few really good players for $3 or $4 at auction. And we're definitely going to miss him in Indy. But hopefully we'll get to see him next year, because he's obviously one of the most fun guys in the group. So yeah, those are my thoughts on Scott's offseason. Another guy who I thought had pretty good offseason was Tom Kaiser. He was in a pretty severe financial destitution situation entering the offseason, and has been able to liquidate a number of his assets while still maintaining a pretty formidable keeper group, and also got some cash. He is up to, I think he's at the same amount of money I do. Yeah, he's got 197, and he got to keep Pablo Lopez, Cole Reagans, Logan Webb. He acquired Tanner Bibee, Evan Carter, still has Matt Olson, you got Mikael Horner, you got Royce Lewis, Chris Bassett. So he's got a really, really good keeper group still. I think he's gonna end up like fourth with just his keepers. But yeah, I really just wanted to call it out, mostly because I was sending him numerous amount of low ball offers on particularly Freddie Peralta before he traded him away. So Tom did a really good job saying no to me. Fortunately, we ended up doing a deal for Joe Ryan that I was very happy about. And I'm sure Tom probably knows that he probably should have went for a little bit more money. But like I said earlier, like sometimes you just get hamstrung by budgets and you have to take what you get. So he was able to get rid of Ian Happ and Joe Ryan and get, you know, another $23 to help him out at auction. And I don't know that it really made a truly significant difference for his keeper selections. But he did, I thought he did a really, really good job navigating out of a really horrific financial situation. So good job, Tom Kaiser. Definitely looking forward to seeing him this weekend. And I just want to thank him again for picking up snacks and beer and stuff. So our Airbnb is ready to go on Friday and Saturday. I'm going to spend some time talking about my own team right now. This was easily the busiest offseason I've had in terms of trades. It felt like I was making a trade every single week, which is pretty much what happens when you try to sell off an entire team and then try to rebuild it all in one offseason. I thought we did an okay job, but a little disappointed with the overall quality of this team, even though I did end up keeping a lot of players. Ended up keeping Bailey Ober, who's been, I guess, a preseason darling of many fantasy analysts over the past couple months. He seems like pretty solid pitcher. I don't really see him ever becoming an elite pitcher. I ended up keeping Nate Eovaldi basically because he's there and his velocity is good. And when his velocity is good, then Nate Eovaldi is usually pretty good. It's kind of between him and Brandon Pfaadt for my final keeper slot, who I ended up trading away to Matt for like $6. I made a trade for Carlos Rodon shortly before spring training with Vanderpool. Basically the idea here was I felt Carlos Rodon had a good spring training or had good velocity at the very beginning of spring training, that his perceived value would go way up. And for a couple weeks it did, and then a couple weeks it went the other direction, and now it's trending back up. It's a pretty good outing yesterday. I think he threw like 5 2/3 no-hit innings. Which, you know, his velocity was a bit better. It wasn't a very good Phillies team that was going against the Yankees. We'll see if I'm going to be competitive at all. I really need Carlos Rodon to be probably a top 20 pitcher in baseball. So kind of skeptical of that, but I thought it was a fair deal at the time. Kept Yandy Diaz because he's cheap and he just hits. Didn't really get any traction trading him. When I did put him out there, it seems like people are looking at his 2023 as kind of an aberration with some of his home runs, but my view's always been I don't really need more than 15 home runs from Yandy Diaz if he's leading off, because he's going to get on base, he's not really going to strike out, he's going to hit a ton of doubles. Nothing, don't need him to be spectacular is basically what I'm saying. I do probably need Spencer Torkelson, who I acquired from Rob, to be close to elite, or as I said in an article, kind of a Pete Alonso light. And I think he can do that. He really came on last season, especially in the second half, but you know, most of the changes that he made with his plate decisions were actually made prior to. It looks like he just kind of ran bad at the very beginning of the season. I was very happy to get him for Rob for what I did. And I think he's, you know, potentially an all-star for the Tigers. Another player that I got was Ryan Pepiot, or Ryan Pepe, as Tim called him. This is a trade that I'm not really sure I wish I would have done. It's kind of the same logic as Carlos Rodon. I wanted to get him before he spiked in spring training, which he never really did. I really like his arsenal coming over from the Dodgers. I think he can be about a strikeout and inning guy. I think he'll be pretty solid in the long run, but if I had to do it again, there's probably four or five other guys that I would have went with at about this price rather than Pepio. Jorge Soler, don't really care about the new park in San Francisco. The guy hits bombs in any park that he's in. He keeps for six. I don't really need him to be elite. I just kind of need him to be what he's been, and that should be good enough for most of the season. I was also very happy to get Gleyber Torres from Rob. I think he's one of the most underrated players in baseball. He should be hitting on a much better Yankees offense this season. Hopefully they'll get Anthony Rizzo for a full year. Judge will be healthy, and obviously they added Juan Soto. So, you know, if he's sitting, you know, in between, after, or before any of those guys, I think Gleyber Torres is going to be a 500-point scorer this season. And I'm happy to keep him at a $12 price. Also added Joe Ryan and Ian Happ from Kaiser. Talked about them a little bit on his little blurb, but I'm super happy to have Joe Ryan back. I think there's another level that he can get to. I was happy to get him. Ian Happ, $7, kind of the same idea as Jorge Soler. Just need him to be what he's been. If he can stay healthy, that would be great. But I do think there's a 30 home run season in Ian Happ's future, so that was the appeal of him. And then finally, I got O'Neill Cruz, who's been absolutely crushing the ball in spring training. He's a player that I've kind of eyed for the past couple of years, but haven't really had a reason to go get him. And obviously last year he was injured for pretty much the entire season. If there was a guy of this group that could pop for 600 points, he'd probably be my best bet. He's going to get, you know, all the at-bats high up in the order. I think the Pirates will be better than people think. It's a wide open NL Central, and I'm super excited to see how he does in the regular season. So, you know, overall, I'm pleased with the guys that I got. Wish I would have done more on the pitching front, as I think I'm pretty light there still, and that'll definitely be something that I try to address at the auction. Might go big, might go medium, might go small. I'm good with what I've got. I'm not really expecting to be in championship game as I've been in the past 3 years, but I think there's at least an opportunity for me to make some noise at the beginning of the season. So it's just kind of my thought on me. Yep. So I have EJ winning the league at this point in time. He's got the best pitching staff in the league, narrowly, over Habby and Kaiser. He made a really big trade with me at the very beginning of the offseason, acquiring Framber Valdez and Zach Wheeler. And then he also sold pieces that didn't fit on his roster back to me. So he did a really good job. He's got enough money to go get more elite players this Saturday. I expect him to be in the playoffs. Like I think he's one of the better teams in the league. He understands what to do. This is definitely not VJ of 2018 or 2019. He's honestly been one of the better players in our game for the past couple seasons. So I really don't have much to say other than that. He just has to go out and do it. You talk about Team Bokanon a little bit now. I think Dan and Tetro's team right now is kind of similar to my team. It's a bunch of keepers that keep for a little above their inflation price, if you will. So there's a little surplus value with most of the guys on this team. I really like Bobby Miller. They've got Sonny Gray for a really good price. They've got some young players who, could turn into stars as soon as the season. So There's reason to be optimistic about this team, especially with the cash on hand that you, Dan, can go out and get, you know, some of the premium players that were thrown back into the player pool. So, you know, I think Dan will be in the mix, you know, just really whether or not he can avoid injuries and have a few players go off. But I think Dan's in a pretty decent spot. I don't think he's anywhere near the top, but he's certainly nowhere near the bottom. So, you know, there's an opportunity if things break the right way. The next person I'm going to talk about is the defending champion, Andrew Happy. It was a pretty boring offseason, in my opinion, for Andrew. He only made two trades, one trading away Max Fried for $30 and then trading Ronald Acuña to Adam for about $34. He had so many players on this roster, you know, obviously led by Spencer Strider, who just by himself is worth more than some teams in this league. That's how highly I value Strider. And then he opted to keep Kevin Gausman, who I had as actually like my second highest pitching value. So he's got the top two pitchers in the league, from my perspective, in addition to two of the top four outfielders in the league, Juan Soto and Kyle Tucker. So there's a lot to like. There's a really good chance that Andrew repeats. He's kind of in the lower middle third in terms of cash on hand, but that's probably enough money to be able to get some good bargains at auction. So I definitely think Andrew will be a playoff team, you know, just have to see if he's able to go back to back. Matt Meiswinger did a really good job navigating his way out of the financial destitution that he found himself in at the very beginning of 2024. Obviously made that massive deal, trading away Zach Gallen to Jack for $120, which is where a lot of his money came from. I'm not super enthused about his prospects overall. I think his keeper squad is okay, but it's pretty dependent on LA De La Cruz becoming, you know, basically a top 20 player, and he definitely needs to see some maturation from Hunter Green to really have any chance this year of making the playoffs. You know, it's funny that he kept Ellie De La Cruz, because I really thought he should have traded Ellie De La Cruz to William last year in exchange for Corey Seager, which might have propelled him past Vandy to make the playoffs. But, you know, now that he's in a situation where he's definitely not going to be a front runner, you know, it makes sense to have someone like Ellie De La Cruz on his team. He's a really fun player to watch. So, yeah, I think Matt has kind of a team that's probably more likely to rebuild. But, you know, there's still a puncher's chance. You know, you got to see through the first 8 weeks of the season just to see what happens with the guys that you draft, the guys that you add. You know, Matt could be in the mix, but might also need to rebuild at some point this season. And we have Adam Hartley. Adam fought Ronald Acuña Jr., obviously the highest projected hitter in the game pool. I thought that was a good move. You know, I mentioned in the write-up, Adam's never going to, you know, go and create an efficient roster. He's not going to go on all the different sites and figure out, you know, who's got the most induced vertical break on their fastball and driving extension with their 98-mile-per-hour fastball with, you know, 3,500 RPMs. That's not what Adam's going to do. So making it simple, keeping it simple for Adam is probably the right way to go. He also acquired Bo Bichette, which I thought was an okay deal for him. Jack definitely wasn't going to keep Bo Bichette. No, seemingly no one wanted him. But I do think Bo will rebound for the Blue Jays this year. So I didn't think it was a terrible move by any means. I did feel like there were more moves that could have been made. I know Ozzie Albies was an option at the very end. That would have been a really, really good pickup. I also felt like Adam was someone who it would have made sense to throw a bunch of money at Andrew to acquire Strider. That didn't happen either. So I have Adam actually in sixth, which feels off. But he'll probably have a pretty good offense. And if Adam adds, you know, a Corbin Burns and an Aaron Nola at auction, then he could have a pretty good team. You know, he kept Brian Wu, who I tried to acquire from him. I think pretty highly of him. So, you know, we'll see. It's it should be a fun auction for Adam, since he's basically just going to be trolling Rob for the first 25 minutes. But yeah, if he can put together some players for himself, he might actually have a chance at being competitive into, you know, the months of July and August this season. On the flip side, he might also just completely fuck up and have to rebuild this thing yet again. My overall thoughts on the league this year is that it's going to be the most wide open season we've had in probably 5 years. I'm excluding the 2020 season for obvious reasons. That one would definitely be more wide open than this one. But in terms of playing in the actual keeper league, I think there are a lot of teams that have an opportunity to make the playoffs, with really almost no exceptions. You know, on the right up at the very bottom, you know, I've got Trent and Tim in red looking at a rebuild. They probably in some ways are, but we've seen teams with very few resources, you know, punch well above their weight in past years. And you know, if Tim and Trent, you know, hit the right guys at the right points in their season, they could completely flip this on their head. So, you know, I think they're in it. Obviously, the guys that I highlighted in green, VJ, Jack, Crab, and Habby, I think they have definitely the best situations just between their keepers and their cash, particularly in the case of Rob. So, I mean, those would be my four picks to make the playoffs right now. Obviously, that can change on Saturday and throughout the regular season, but those are the guys that I like most. And then, you know, everyone, Yellow, Kaiser, Gower, Vandy, Sean, Adam, and Matthew, you know, so much can change at auction as well. So, but like, I don't see there being a runaway team like I did last year. I think last year I had Vandy in blue. He was the only one. I don't really see a team with quite that depth this year. Like, I really like BJ and Jack's teams, but I can see situations in which they don't make the playoffs. Last year, we saw Vandy even have, you know, basically running bad for most of the regular season, still come back and get fourth place and basically be within one Ketel Marte home run away from making the championship game. I just don't know that we're going to see a team like that. Well, maybe we'll see it next year, but we definitely aren't seeing it this year. There's no one with Vandy's keeper depth going into the auction and then also having the most amount of money at the auction. I think you would be foolish to think that Rob is anywhere close to where that team was at this point last year. So yeah, in terms of the league, it's wide open. Should be a really fun year. And yeah, those are just my thoughts in terms of kind of the landscape heading into the auction and the year as a whole.